Hi, I'm Kathy Miller, professor of medicine at the Indiana University School of Medicine in Indianapolis. Welcome to Medscape Oncology Insights and the 2016 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. We are all getting older, and that means our patients are getting older, both newly diagnosed patients and our patients who are surviving are living longer, and that gives us the privilege of caring for a growing population of older breast cancer patients. It also gives us the challenge of identifying the unique needs of those older patients and providing optimal care. That's been a long-time concern of my next guest, Dr. Aarti Hurria. Dr. Hurria is professor of medical oncology and director of the Cancer and Aging Research Program at the City of Hope Comprehensive Cancer Center in Duarte, California. Welcome, Aarti.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
How did you first get interested in the older patient?
You know, I've always loved the idea of taking care of someone throughout a lifetime, and there's nothing like being able to care for someone throughout their aging process. And with cancer being a disease associated with aging, it was a natural fit to train in geriatrics and oncology.
There are some topics that are a little challenging to bring up with women. Age, weight. How do you approach the topic of age with those older patients who you're seeing?
You know, they actually, I have found, understand that they are aging and they really want what, you know, the best treatment for them. They want that treatment to be individualized. And so if age needs to be a part of that factor, they want me to be thinking about it. But more importantly, they want to be thought of independent of their chronologic age. They want us to look at them based upon what their functioning is. How are they in their daily life? And so at times the age can be a barrier in that really we want to look beyond it as we're evaluating that patient. And that's what our patients want too.
So I hear a lot of people talk about chronologic age versus physiologic age. Age is certainly not just the number. But how do we really evaluate the fitness or the functional status of our patients?
Yeah, this is a wonderful question. So this is really what geriatricians focus on every day. So the idea behind geriatrics is really to understand what is the functional age of that patient. And what geriatricians do is something called a geriatric assessment. So what they're doing is they're trying to understand what are the factors other than age that predict someone's risk for morbidity or mortality from a certain outcome. And they're looking at things like, what is their function? What are their other medical problems? What is their cognition? What is their social support, their psychological state, their nutritional status? So it's really taking this very comprehensive look at who an older individual is and then utilizing that as a part of your decision-making process.
So I can hear a lot of our listeners thinking, a busy practice, I have 30 minutes, maybe a luxurious 60 minutes for a new patient. Not trained in geriatrics. I don't have a geriatrician in my area.
Yep.
That's a lovely idea, but how do I do that?
So this is the great news. We've spent the last decade and a half trying to figure that out for oncologists. And I completely understand because I trained in geriatrics and then I went into a fellowship at Memorial Sloan Kettering where the volume of patients is very, very brisk. And the key is, absolutely right, that if we're going to try to incorporate this into oncology practice, we really do need to make these tools feasible. And so that's really what we've worked on developing. So we have a geriatric assessment tool now that can be primarily completed by the patient. Actually, very little healthcare provider time is needed. And if you go to the Cancer and Aging Research Group website, we've actually now put that tool up on the website. A patient can complete that information even at home and get you a printout and a summary of what that information is. And our data has shown that the vast majority of older adults can do this on their own. We've also figured out how to do it within the clinic using iPads. So in our practice, I am at a comprehensive cancer center where I'm the only geriatrician at the cancer center. So we have the patients complete the assessment on the iPad, and we've now programmed it so that the results can be available for the oncologist when they see the patient.
So how long does it take the average patient to complete the survey, whether they're doing it with good old-fashioned pencil and paper or on an iPad? And what sort of questions does it ask?
Okay, so it takes less than half an hour to answer all of the questions, really even less than that for those who are very fit and functional.
So maybe one test is how long does it take them to do the
Wait.
assessment?
Actually, it's a great test. It's a great test. It's probably a great cognitive test. We haven't specifically looked at that, but I think it's something that we should look at, you know, for the outliers. But, you know, the questions, Kathy, are really practical. I mean, there are things like, you know, can you do your shopping? Can you take transportation? You know, can you manage your finances? So there are things that have direct implications for cancer treatment. For example, can you take transportation? That, you know, how are you going to get to the hospital if you have fever and neutropenia in the middle of the night? You know, can you manage your finances? People hold on to their ability to manage their finances till the very end. The minute they give that up, you have to start thinking about, is there a problem with calculation? Is there a problem with memory in some way? And it opens a door to sort of exploring those things. But there are simpler tools. So for the practicing oncologist, wants to know, can I predict who is going to have severe side effects from my treatment? That's really what they need to know, and they need to know it relatively quickly as they're making a treatment decision.
I think they also want to know, independent of the cancer, how long might this person be otherwise expected to survive? Because as that time gets shorter and shorter,
right,
I think the concern about toxicity gets greater.
Right.
You have to start wondering, is this someone who I should be treating?
Absolutely.
Even if I think I could treat them safely.
So that's you are a geriatrician at heart, I have to say, because of the questions you've just asked. So wonderful. So there are tools for both of these, and they're super easy. So let me first start with that. So let's just talk about first life expectancy, and then we'll talk about how do you predict toxicity. Life expectancy. There is a site called ePrognosis. And what that has are several tools that you can utilize that can estimate someone's life expectancy. You can estimate 2-year life expectancy, 4-year life expectancy for someone who's hospitalized. Now, the challenge with these, first of all, these take not even minutes to do. And you will get an answer very quickly right there in clinic with your patient. The challenge is they've not been validated among patients with cancer. So you have to think about that.
So they're only looking at other health factors,
non-cancer,
independent of the cancer.
Exactly. Now, another tool you can use, if you say, gosh, I don't even have the time for that, right? Within the NCCN guidelines, we've placed a table that looks at life expectancy by age. And if you can even just say, this is a healthy 70-year-old, or no, this is a sick 70-year-old patient, it will tell you, here's a life expectancy for someone who's healthy at 70, average, and sick. And I keep that in my pocket as just a quick reference so that I can think about that as I'm making a treatment decision. And that takes seconds.
So the other question is toxicity.
Yeah.
We've seen few older patients in our cooperative group trials.
Yeah.
But even those pretty selected, probably healthier older patients who do enroll in those trials do have greater risk of serious toxicity.
Right.
How do we predict that in the more average older patient who comes to us?
Absolutely. So the Cancer and Aging Research Group has worked on this over the past several years, and there have been two studies. One was a development study and then a validation study. And we took 500 patients across the U.S., 10 participating centers, all over the age of 65, and we let the doc be the doc. We said, you give the treatment that you think is right for your patient. And what we're going to do is we're just going to capture those geriatric assessment factors, and we're going to identify which ones predicted for who was at risk for significant side effects. So two big take-home messages. Well, number one, we developed the model, and we were able to validate it in an independent cohort. So 750 patients overall participated. The key things that predicted toxicity were the following. So number one, age is a predictor, and it was age over 72 in the data set. And that's because it's really during that seventh decade of life where we start to see a lot of the physiologic changes of aging actually come to bear. So it makes sense. Number two, it was GI and GU cancers predicted risk. Number three, there were tumor and treatment variables. So for example, if I'm giving polychemotherapy, standard doses of chemotherapy, if the patient is anemic, if they have a low creatinine clearance, and then there are five geriatric assessment questions that identify patients at risk. So it was, have you fallen in the last 6 months? Are you able to take your medicines at the right dose and at the right time? Do you have challenges with your hearing? Are you having difficulty hearing? Have you decreased your social activities because of either your physical or your emotional health? So really very simple, practical questions that you can ask the patient right there in practice. And again, if you go to the Cancer and Aging Research Group website and push on chemotherapy toxicity calculator, it will be able to stratify if your patient's in low, intermediate, or high risk, if you can ask them those 11 questions in practice. And it gives you, it doesn't tell you treat or not treat, it just gives you a place to start with the patient about here's what we're going through together if we're going to go down this road, and is it worth it to you? Now, one other thing we did was we tried to look at, can the doctor predict who's going to have that toxicity?
I'm going to bet no.
Well, you got it right. You know, so I, being an oncologist,
older patients are tricky.
There
if you
go.
Just say, how are you doing?
There you go.
They all say, oh, I'm doing okay. I know nobody wants to admit
that's right
when they're struggling. I think we all like
yes.
to think we're doing okay
yeah.
for much longer than mm-hmm. might be what someone else thinks.
Yep. And the doctor, too, is such a wonderful patient advocate that they want that patient to be okay, too. And what we found is that single sort of item assessment that we often do, Karnofsky or ECOG, cannot predict the risk, while the 11-item model can. So it's exactly what you said. These were great doctors. The issue is it's really complex. You need more than one question.
I want to take you in our last couple of minutes to another sometimes difficult relationship that we have to negotiate with our older patients, their adult children.
Yes.
Who I think come in different flavors. Some who think mom or dad are going to live forever mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. ought to be treated like they're 20, even though they're 94.
Mm-hmm.
And some who maybe are surprised that mom and dad are not functioning as well as they had thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
How do you negotiate those relationships?
You know, a couple of things come into play. Number one, for an older adult, that social support and that care is so important that we want to engage the family. They need the family in this process. So, you know, if the patient wants, first of all, the child in the room, then it's okay. Then we, you know, with the patient's permission, absolutely. But we truly try to, you know, it's sort of like pediatrics, you're helping the parents. With geriatrics, you're helping the children. And they're going through the journey with their parent. And those feelings that they're describing are all emotions of love in some way or another. So really, for me, it's establishing rapport with that child, understanding what does the parent, my patient, want? How much do they want their kids to be involved? And then to that degree, involving them along each step. The key is the following, though. A key part of what a geriatrician does is assess, does the patient have the capacity to make a decision? And you can have the capacity to make a decision even in the setting of dementia or mild cognitive impairment. And so part of my assessment is to work with that patient, and assessing capacity is super easy. Anyone can do it. Can they understand the risks and benefits and alternatives? And can they state their choice? Once they can do that, then I can almost relieve the kids a little and say, you know what, your mom's able to make this decision with me. And you're just here really to support that decision. And especially when, you know, individuals have parents with cognitive issues, they sometimes feel like they have to make the decision. And it takes that burden off.
Really great information and great tools to help us have better discussions with our patients and hopefully make better decisions with them. Thank you, Artie, for joining us. And thank you for joining us today as well. This is Dr. Kathy Miller reporting from the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium 2016.